Tonight I want to talk about the family. And my subheading for this is the good, the bad, and the ugly. Please stay with me to the end or you'll never know who the ugly one is. Okay? We've all got some, okay? We all have the benefits and the burdens of family. Let's just call it what it is. I'm not a cynic, trust me. I am a realist, though. And sometimes I am just way too honest, and I've been told that before. But nevertheless, I am one who does not like to mask anything. So we are going to call family, family tonight, okay? And don't you dare tell me my family's not like that, because families are human beings, and all human beings are like that, okay? Okay. Tell you what, I will try this and see if I can stand still, okay? Otherwise, I'll have to drag this mic with me all over the place. When it comes to family, I can be very honest, all right? Please don't leave here tonight saying, Pastor David does not like family, because I do. I love family. And if you've ever been in private conversation with me, it almost always comes around to family, all right? So I love family. My message tonight, though, is going to weave back and forth between our natural biological family and our spiritual family, our church family, okay? And now you all have to promise that the stories that I tell you tonight about our church family, you will not repeat to anyone, okay? And I'll tell you what, you only have to be at Central Assembly about one time, and you know that there's been such intermarrying, you better not say anything about anyone about them, all right? Because I know there's connections, and I know there's a lot of connections I'm not even aware of, okay? But let's start out with the good, okay? We are so fortunate to be a part of a group of people that are mysteriously linked to each other simply by believing in the same God and acknowledging and receiving the Father of all. There, I just put it out there, that's how we're all related. We are in Him, and He is the Father of all. We're family. Whether you like it or not, we're family. Psalm 133, and I'm just going to read the first couple verses. How good and pleasant it is when brothers live together in unity. It is like precious oil poured out on the head, running down on the beard, running down on Aaron's beard, down upon the collar of his robes. It is as the dew of Hermon were falling on the Mount Zion, for there the Lord bestows his blessing, even life forevermore. Being a part of a family. I come from a large family. A mother and a father, four boys, two girls, and we all were living in a house that was less than 1,000 square feet. Seriously. How it happened, I have no idea. I truly don't. Might be the fact that we had almost like two families, three in the older side, three in the younger side. We had 4.5 years in between those two. And so by the time those others were coming up and taking space, the first three were getting ready to go. And you talk about closeness. It really defines a close family in a new way when I tell you how close we were. Seriously. Now, I know what they say about Arkansas and the foothills of Missouri and all of that. But yes, my youngest brother slept with my oldest sister for several years before he got to move to the next room. Okay? And they still talk today. Amazing. But it takes the cooperation of everyone in the family to make this kind of circumstance work. Okay? It doesn't happen without everybody working together and everybody cooperating. And as my mother would say, and everyone listening to just one voice. Our parents made it work, never expecting from us what they themselves were not willing to do. Being a part of a family takes a lot of give and take. A lot of flexibility, a lot of patience, no room for jealousy, and no room for self-centeredness. My father's favorite statement was, "You will do, or you will be, or you will not do, or I'll know the reason why." To this day, I can't figure that statement out, okay? I knew what he meant, but I have no idea, truly. I'll know the reason why. My mom's favorite statement while we were growing up, "Bob, the neighbors will hear you." And that was generally when he was getting after us, even though there wasn't a neighbor within 100 yards of any direction from our house. Seriously, we lived at the end of a street, and the wildlife is the only thing I think I'd ever heard. But seriously, when my dad was finally had enough, he'd start in, and my mom would start going through, shutting the windows. "Bob, the neighbors were going to hear you." Now, if she was here, she'd say, "Oh, I didn't do that." She did. But we always knew discipline, and we always knew love. And we knew it not by what they did, but their example. My mom and dad did, from time to time, use that statement, "This is going to hurt me more than it will hurt you." That is the biggest lie from the pit, okay? Trust me, it is. Trust me. I'm going to tell you something. My dad, we have never known, none of his children has ever known him with two arms. He only has one arm. He lost one in a strip mining. We're from Pennsylvania, and they did a lot of strip mining. And my mom and dad were married only for about 9 months. And he was with his partner. Have you ever seen these drag lines that are as big as a house? They were running one of those, and he took the job of going in the back to grease, and those gears are as big as a house. And his partner up front didn't remember or just whatever and started up the drag line, and his arm went through the gears. Now, this was before workman's comp, and I think he said back in 1947 when that happened, I think he said he got something like $1,200 for the loss of an arm. Now, I'm going to tell you something else. Don't ever tell my dad he's handicapped, because he will flat tell you he is not. My dad can tie his own shoes. Well, I don't know about anymore. I think he's gone to Velcro. But he could tie his own shoes. The only thing he had a problem doing was washing his hand. And since he worked in heavy construction and worked on, when they were putting in the 50s in the interstate system throughout this country, that's what he was doing. And he'd come home and his hand would be as black as some of those pitch pots that he'd put out at night. And that was the thing he'd have to do. Mom would have to come in and help him wash his hand because he could only rub it on the sink with the wash rag so long. Okay, so you got the story on my dad. But this man never said, "I can't do that." Never said, and to this day he won't say, "I can't do that." He might say, "You know, I have a little struggle with that anymore, or just not able to do like I used to do." And that's okay. We're going to give him that, because he has proved that he can be what he needs to be and what God's called him to be with what he has to work with. Okay? That was established from the start. And we, honestly, my sister was born like, I want to say 6 months after that happened. And none of us have ever known him with two arms. We've seen pictures, and when we see pictures, we laugh. "Dad, you look so funny with two arms." Now, he would allow us to get by with teasing him about stuff. Never bothered him in the least. And we had a delivery guy come one time, and my dad had on, we call it his wife beater shirt, you know, the strap t-shirt. And because his arm was off at the shoulder, okay, I'm getting so personal here, I didn't even think I was going to. But anyway, he just had his Oscar right there, okay? That's what we called it, his Oscar. The hair under his arm. So it was just there. Well, this guy got tickled, apparently, when he saw that, and he snickered. And apparently it was on a bad day, because my dad is so long-suffering, it's not even funny. But my dad took offense to it. And that's the only time I ever remember my dad getting upset about someone looking and seeing and, you know, for whatever that's worth. But we always knew discipline because they showed discipline in their lives. We always knew love because they showed love in their lives and between each other. I want you to know something. In a family, most of the good that a child will ever learn, they do not learn because someone sat them down and taught them to do it. It's because they have observed it in the family, and it's the same way all the bad things, most of the bad things that a child will learn. If they learn it, if the parents are not doing what they should, they're learning it from the parents or the lack thereof. Okay, I have to ask a question of the men, okay? Guys, we have two pockets on the back of our pants, right? Sometimes they only put a button on one pocket, right? And why do you think that is? Why do you think that is? There's a button on the pocket you're supposed to put your wallet in. That's, quote, you know, that's your security. Sometimes the other pocket will have a button, but most of the time, slacks just have a button on the left side, because that's where the normal. How many guys carry their wallet on the left side? Okay. Anybody here carry it on the right? I do. You know why? Because I saw for years, my dad, when he picked up his wallet, he got it out of his right pocket because that's where it was. He had a hard time reaching around to the other one. For me, I don't know why, and I never realized it until I was an adult, that I was carrying my wallet on the wrong side of my pants. But my handkerchief has never been stolen. It's on the side where the button is. Okay? We learn what we observe. And when we as family are doing our thing, whether it be right or whether it be wrong, there is someone else in the family who is watching us, and they are going to do what they see us do. And that is not just valid in raising children or in young families. That is until we are no longer on this earth. What we do, someone is watching, and we are setting the example for someone. Families do that. My point in all of this is to say, regardless of the family size, regardless of the family mix, we can live together in unity and we can live together to make this world a better place. Families do that. I also want to relate this theme to the family of God. Ephesians 1:5 says, His unchanging plan has always been to adopt us into His family by bringing us to Himself through Jesus Christ. God offers you a family of friends and friends who are family. His church. When you transfer your trust into Christ, He not only pardons you, He places you in a family of friends. Family, far and away, outpaces any other biblical term in the New Testament than anything else in describing the church. Brothers or sisters, brothers and sisters, just brothers, appears a whopping 148 times between Acts and Revelation. Isn't that amazing? Do you understand the importance that God places on family? And again, they're intertwined. Family of God, your biological family, that is God's purpose and way of bringing us together and making us feel in this world that we are not of, making us feel like we have something here as we sojourn. We have family. And I'll tell you what, and all of you probably can say the same, there may be a lot of church family that are closer to you than your own biological family. God heals his family through family. In the church, we use our gifts to love one another, honor one another, keep an eye on troublemakers, and carry each other's burdens. And that little part that I dropped in there, keep an eye on troublemakers. You know, the scripture, Jesus said, we are to be what? Wise as serpents, harmless as doves. And you know what? Sometimes there are those in the family that act up. My brother was terrible. Seriously. My youngest brother, my mom would be whipping him with a switch and he'd be laying on the floor laughing at her. And that was just more than she could handle. But I will tell you what, my mom never said, you wait till your father gets home. I don't know if I ever heard that. She took care of it right then and there. I know she got aggravated because he wouldn't cry. I mean, why give the kid a licking if he's not going to cry? You know, it almost seems worthless. But family takes care of family. And family allows family to be family. I want you to know that since 1970, I have lived far away from most biological family. After leaving college, went to the West Coast, definitely didn't have anybody out there, came all the way back east, spent 4.5 years there, then came back to the Midwest, and the family, for the most part, has stayed put. I was just the nomad, okay? And we have not always been able to talk with or be with our biological family when we needed them. But that's nobody's fault but my own, okay? Because I chose to come here through the leading of the Lord. But I will tell you this. I will tell you this. I never lacked for a warm arm, a warm hand, a kind smile, an encouraging word when I needed it most because of the family of God. They filled the gap. In 1987, my own family started going through a trial and test that made me know that if I was going to come through this, I was going to have to rely on and trust in my church family to make it through. I came back to Springfield in 1984 to go to the seminary. Had been here in the early 70s at CBC. And left, was out in ministry, and then came back in 84 to attend the seminary. And I did that, and as when we came, everything fell into place. It was perfect. I started out with the seminary, and then my wife was able, she was a registered nurse, and she became the night nursing supervisor for Cox North. She'd worked at St. John's for a while, but then went over to the night nursing supervisor here. And the Lord was taking care of us beautifully. I mean, just, it was a good thing. And after 7.5 years, my wife had a reoccurrence of breast cancer. When we were pastoring in Pennsylvania, she had her first episode of breast cancer. And boy, I'll tell you, back then, even just that far back, if they had then what they have now, you know, things may have been different. But she had a reoccurrence 7.5 years later, and we almost thought we were out of the woods because at that time they were saying if you are cancer-free for 5 to 7 years, then they felt like you were cancer-free. Well, this had just been a little over 7.5 years, and it all started up again. Long story short, she passed away in 1990. And there have been times I've said to people, my first wife, and they just look at me like, okay, now what did you do? You have a second wife. And I'm going to tell you some funny family stories on that. Well, I'll tell you what. And it's family, trust me. Our families helped us out all they could. They came when we needed them. My mom and dad, of course, this is now 22 years ago, they hopped in the car, drove all night long from Northeast Pennsylvania here to be with us when we needed someone to be with us all the time. And my wife's mother was with us, and just a couple weeks ago, she went to be with the Lord, 97 years old, but she spent 16 years with us. And we just, by God's mercy and by God's grace, we made it, okay? But I will tell you this, in those most difficult times, I don't know how many of you remember Pastor Wanamaker, but that man was a pastor of pastors. And he would come and visit to the home, to the hospital. And when he left, you just felt like, you know what? Everything's going to be okay. He just had that heart. And if for nothing else, I will love that man through eternity because he encouraged us and would come and stand at the foot of the bed in the hospital and sing. And that's probably the time that you would just prefer not to sing. But he would stand there and sing. And the last day that my wife lived, he came in and he took one look and he looked at me and he goes, "You do know she's not here, right?" And I said, "Really?" He goes, "Oh, no." He said, "She's in heaven." And he started to sing, and you know what? To this day, I cannot remember the song that he sang. I try and try to remember that, and I just don't. I don't know why, but I do know that after he sang, I sat on the couch in that room, and I fell asleep. And I had not slept for I don't know how long. And he didn't say, "I'm going to sing, and you're going to be at peace," or nothing. He just came in, stood there, and sang, and I slept. And sometime after 11 o'clock that night, she passed away. But I will tell you this, if it weren't for the family of God, I would have been very alone that day. But I don't look back with any sorrow or sadness. 22 years ago, you know, that was the trial and testing for that day. I'll tell you what I do go back and think a lot about, and that is how my 11-year-old and 14-year-old daughter were treated by this family. Linda Cox, Pastor Justin's mom, for the last 4 to 6 weeks of Meredith's life, she came and visited every day when she got out of school. Every day. She never came and stayed more than like 5 minutes, but every day she came, prayed, and said, "I'll see you tomorrow." When we had to take her to the hospital, Linda made the trek to the hospital. Now, mind you, she had 3 boys she was taking care of also, 3 teenage boys. But she made it every day to the hospital. The Borgstats, the Worthleys, the Crouches, the Whitcorns, the Andersons, the youth pastor, Pastor Mike Rakes. Pastor Mike Rakes was the key to my oldest daughter staying firm in her faith. Think of it. He has been just one of those lighthouses for her. And she was so upset. They were living in North Carolina, and she was on her way to Florida with her husband. He was being transferred down there. And the very same week that she left, Pastor Mike Rakes was voted in at Winston-Salem, where they were attending church. And she goes, "I don't understand this. This was my opportunity to be with him again." And I had to remind her that he was not the lighthouse at that point in her life, but he was the lighthouse for her, and the strength and the encouragement and the support she needed as a 14-year-old girl. But these people that I mentioned, they are all still part of this family. They are all people that did not have to do anything. They could have just said, "Wow, bad deal. So sorry that's happened." But they were people, seriously, that I would call. I always call my mom and dad, To this day, if I've got something I can't figure out, I'll call my mom and dad. We'll talk for an hour and talk it through. Sometimes I think they're sleeping on the other end. They could very well be, but I'm still talking, and it makes me feel good. But these people that were so close and helped us and strengthened us and encouraged us and were there for us, those are the people I could call in the middle of the night that I could expect when things got really bad that they were going to be right there doing what they could. You know what? That doesn't happen if it's not family. That is family. I said by God's divine providence, we came here in 1984. And I believe with all my heart that even though we came with the thought that I was going to go to the seminary, get my degree, and then, you know, go back into ministry, that was the plan, that was the thought. But God had something else. And I believe because my girls were so anchored in this church and knew the people here were safe people, that they were able to grow. And I'm telling you right now, both of my girls today are saved, living for the Lord. Their families are living for the Lord. And I will ever be grateful to the family for that. Now, I know God's keeping power. I know that our salvation is not of works. It is not of men. It is of God only. But sometimes we are the keeping grace that God puts in people's lives to keep us in the place where we need to be. After my wife passed away, I said, there's no way I'm going to rip these kids up and go somewhere else to minister. God opened the door for me to be general counsel. Worked there for 19 years. And then I didn't anymore. And I'm going to tell you one more story, and then we're going to move on to the bad. But the biggest part of my message tonight, I wanted it to be around the good, okay? And I have to do the bad and the ugly because I have to finish out this title I put on here. But talk about divine providence, okay? After we had gone through all of that, and I was getting pretty good at being a single parent. You know, I had decided when years before my girls got to be teenagers, I will never buy a teenager, or especially a 16-year-old, a car. I'll tell you something right now. When that oldest girl turned 16, we went out that day and bought a car. I was so tired of hauling those kids cross town, uptown, and they... Kristen, when she was in middle school, started playing cello. Now, it's a beautiful instrument. But I'll tell you what, if you hear of anybody talking about their your grandchildren are going to learn to play cello, tell them don't. That thing is massive to haul around in a car. But she had to play cello. But I was glad to do it. I really was. But by the time she turned 16, I was grateful that she had a car. And you know, I had become very comfortable with being a single dad. I really was. I don't think I damaged them too badly. Most of the things they talk about now, they laugh about. So that's good. But 3 years afterwards, I was not expecting anything, okay? Like I said, I was getting real comfortable with this single dad stuff. And again, and don't tell my wife I said this, but by divine providence, God led me to someone else. Now, a lot of people don't like to talk about the past when they've got a new future. But you know what? It's all a part of our lives. It's all a part of what God has placed in our lives to make us who we are. I had never met Esther. She's been in the church since 1973 when her parents had to bring her home from Korea. They were missionaries in Korea for over 36 years. They had to bring her home when she turned 18, and she went to Evangel. So her mom came home with her, got her settled, and off mom went back. So Esther has been here and has been a part of Central Assembly since 1973. But you know what? Never saw her, never knew anything about Esther Schultes, didn't know a thing until someone said to me, "How would you like to go see Dolly tonight?" Now, here was the thing about Dolly, and we're talking Dolly Parton, okay? I love Dolly Parton. Not for the obvious reasons. So let's get beyond that right now. But I love Dolly Parton. I love her music. I love some of the songs that she's written. And I'll watch her anytime she's on TV. But I will tell you this. Friends of ours who knew that said, "Hey, how would you like to go see Dolly tonight?" And I said, "I didn't know. Is she in Branson? You know, she, well, you know." No. There was a movie that came out. It was called Straight Talk. And they said, "We're going to go see this. If you'd like to come, it's a good movie." And they made me say yes. And then they said, "Oh, by the way, would you mind if we invited Esther?" I said, "Esther who?" And they said, "Esther Schultes." "Oh, yeah, yeah, I know Esther. She's in choir." That's where we met. So after 2 or 3 hours of them trying to track Esther down, she had had a dentist appointment that day. Nobody knew where she was at, even her parents. I guess our friends called the parents and everything. And they finally tracked her down, and we had what was our first date. That night was also the first day that my oldest daughter had gotten her license to drive. So the trade-off was, "Dad, it's okay for you to go out with Esther, but Lisa and I would like to go." And you know what? I fell for it. I let them take the car and go. And I went out with Esther. And a lot of that is then just history. Next week, Esther and I will be married 19 years. And we already have 3 grandchildren. 10, 8, and 4. She's their Nana. And don't you ever tell those girls she's not, because she's Nana, and that's it. They love her. And they know the relationship. They know that that's Kristen's stepmom, but she's Nana, and they love her. And please, please, please pray for us this weekend. We're doing a first. We are going on a road trip with this family all the way back to Northeast Pennsylvania. 18 to 20 hours of driving time. 7 people in a van. Okay? So just remember, if you have nothing else to pray for Pastor David. He's going to need it. But these kids are great. These kids are great. Of course, you know, all grandchildren are great, aren't they? Every one of them are. That's because they're like our, they are just like our kids. I delight in telling my daughter when she starts complaining to me about her kids. I'll just sit back. She says, "You're not saying anything." "No, I'm just waiting for a moment that I can tell you it's payback time." Her oldest daughter is so much like her. Most people confuse their names now. And she's 10, Kristen's 36. Come on. They are so much alike, it's hard to choose now which one is which. But God has a way of evening the score, doesn't he? I like that. But I'm going to tell you just one more funny story about the family. And you'll all enjoy this. I know you will. Esther and I dated maybe 6-8 months. Well, it was probably about 7 months before we knew it was right for us to get together. So, December 2nd, I proposed to Esther. And she always tells me the only reason I did that was because the next day I went to the hospital for back surgery. And I needed someone to stay with the girls. Not really. But that's what she claims. So if you hear the story from her, that'll be the story. But here's the funny thing. We kind of were flying under the radar with church. Not many people knew that we were dating until she got engaged. And one Sunday morning, you're going to love this. I'm telling you are. One Sunday morning, Esther goes into the restroom. And one of the dear ladies of the church said to her, as I say, it's family, so it's okay, it's family. I would know that you were David Jane's fiance because you look just like his first wife. That's family. That's family. Now, I'm going to tell you something. This dear sister really must have an eye issue. Okay, because here I'm going to tell you the difference. Esther is 5'3", with brown hair. Meredith was 5'10", with red hair. Look nothing alike. But she could tell because they looked alike. That's family. But let's move on. There is a bad part here I want to talk about also. I don't really like to talk about this, but from time to time, yes, there is bad in the biological family, and there is, sad to say, sometimes bad in the spiritual family. Because we are free agents and because we sometimes stray from what God really has for us, sometimes people just get off on the wrong track. Romans 12:10 says, "Be devoted to one another in brotherly love." Romans 12:5, "Each of us finds our meaning and function as a part of his body." That's from the Message. I had an aunt who literally tried to destroy my brother. She had hired him, and then once he got into the business, he became really good at what he was doing, and it was probably the problem was that he was doing better than she was, and she trumped up everything. And seriously, we're talking my dad's sister. It was sad. And we're saying, this shouldn't be. This is family. You know, let's try to iron this out. But she drug him as far down as she could. She drug him into court. And it was just a mess. Paul dealt with it when he wrote about this in some of his epistles. Not everyone was dwelling together in unity. Okay? They were hauling each other off to court. And Paul says, it shouldn't be this way. Nothing was ever accomplished or achieved by the family of God fighting with each other and not dwelling together in unity. That has never happened yet. When we do not dwell together in unity, there's something wrong. Someone or a group of someones have gotten their focus on themselves or what they want versus what God wants. And it's not hard to detect that, okay? Whenever church feuds are over, it's only by the grace of God that we're able to move forward. Because if we were waiting for someone else to take the high road, oftentimes that just doesn't happen. But when we can learn to dwell together in unity, God will take care of the rest. You know, this Christian life is not difficult. It is only difficult when we try to make it do what we want to do. If we would follow the path that God has laid out for us, not only for us, but for his body, it wouldn't be hard at all. I'm going to tell you something right now. The trials and the struggles that we went through in that time where we were being tried and tested in our faith, because, and I'm not bragging, trust me, I'm not, but because there was a single focus, keep your eyes and your heart on him, and he will bring it to a point that not only is good for you, but will edify the body as well. Most of the time when family of believers don't get along with each other, it's just simply due to people getting self-centered, being jealous, or just not getting their own way. I hate when adults act like children. That is so ridiculous. Okay, that's probably the loudest you'll hear me speak. My contention is when we have these frictions and we have these problems, and yes, it is normal to have that, but here's the thing. I believe these things happen because we get our eyes on something other than God. If we have kept our eyes on God, these things would not happen. In his book, Cure for the Common Life, Max Lucado has written, "If similar experiences create friendships, Shouldn't the church overflow with friendships? With whom do you have more in common than fellow believers? We're all amazed by the same manger. We're all stirred by the same Bible. We're all saved by the same cross. And we are all destined for the same home. Psalm 119:63 says, I am a friend to everyone who fears you, to anyone who obeys you. The church is more than family. We are friends. More than friends, we are family, and we are God's family of friends. Now, I told you that was going to be very brief on the bad part, okay? Now we have to get to the ugly. Now, I told you I was going to tell you who was the ugly, okay? And I don't have a whole lot to say about this either. My younger brother, who is 4.5 years younger than me, when he was born, all of us, the three older ones, plus so many other adults, thought that he was a little Martian. That poor child was so ugly, it wasn't even funny. And even my mom said, but he's so cute. But he was just ugly. Now, he's very handsome today. Very handsome. So don't despise meager beginnings, okay? But that was the only thing I had for ugly. In the family of God, there are times when things get ugly. When members of the family just can't let the family bickerings and the troubles go. That's when it gets ugly. You didn't pick me. I didn't pick you. And you may not like me, and for all you know, I may not like you. But since God picked and likes us both, we don't have a choice. We're family. We are family. But oh, how good and how pleasant it is when brothers and sisters live together in unity. You know what? 27 years in this church, and I know it hasn't all been smooth, but I will tell you this. I would take every day of it over if I could, because I was with my family. And even though we had our squabbles and we had our difficulties, I'm still with my family. And I will tell you this, this church, for me personally, is a lighthouse that the light never goes out. When I went through the darkest of times, we had family, we had someone there. And in the good times, 17 years ago, God placed someone in my life that gave me probably the most precious friendship that I have ever had in a lifetime. God brought Pastor Tom here. And he and I, from the first day, struck it off, because the night he came into choir for the first time, he looked at me, and I don't know why he said this, but he says, you know, I've got an idea, you're going to be trouble. But I knew when he said it, the way he said it, I knew he meant, I think you and I are going to get along. And you know why that is? Because he's every bit as much a trouble as I am. I want you to know that. But God placed him in my life. He has been the confidant. He has been the help. He has been the encouragement that I needed in my life. And you know what? 2 years ago, God put someone else in my life, Pastor Peterson. I'll tell you what, I feel so unworthy to stand up here and preach when you all could sit and listen to him preach. Come on. He is probably one of the finest preachers we've had stand behind that pulpit, and we've had some great ones, haven't we? Over 27 years, we've had some fantastic, but I'll tell you what, I would come and sit and listen to Pastor Peterson preach every day if I had the opportunity, and I sincerely mean that. But God puts in our lives the people he knows that are going to be the iron against iron. He puts those in who are going to be the balm when we need it. And you, every one of you here tonight, are in the same boat that I am. God has placed people in your lives, people from God's family of friends, that has made you and helped you to be the person you are. Don't say you got here on your own, because you didn't. Nobody does. Nobody does. You are here because of God's divine grace, because of his providence. And if you ever question, why did I ever come here, just hang on. The family gets better. The family. I love my brothers and sisters. I mean that. I really do. I can't say I did always. You know, when we were teenagers, oh my goodness. Here's the thing. My brother would do anything he could. I am not into sports, okay? When Pastor Peterson talks about sports, it's like, la, 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 la. I have no idea, no comprehension what he's talking about because I just don't do sports. So when I would go out, my brother would say, come on, play catch. It wasn't me, okay? But I'd put the glove on and go, and so he'd wire the ball, smack me right in the face with it, and say, I can't play with this kid. He doesn't know anything about this. Yeah, that's right, I didn't. So why'd you ask me to come play? But I will tell you this. When a kid was bullying me in school in the fourth grade, and we happened to be in a small enough school where fourth grade was in where the high school was, all of a sudden my brother showed up in my hallway, and he took care of the bully. So one day out of his life, I did like him. Now, thank God. God has been gracious. He now is a bishop with the Pentecostal Church of God. Never would have dreamed it in our lives, none of us, because he was the Elvis in the family. Trust me, he was. But God had plans for him to put him in another family, and he's been there, and God has blessed him. And I could say the same thing about every one of our family. We still have one that's not still claiming the Lord. But you know what? He will. I have every confidence because God's word says, when you train the child in the way he should go, I believe with all my heart he will come back and he will serve God. He's a great person. He would do anything for you. He's just not living for the Lord the way he should. But you know what? We're all a part of the family, and you know what? Every one of us are needing the person sitting next to us and the person sitting behind us and the person sitting in front of us.